Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Elisa D. Metcalf. She's had year-long careers as a line cook, veterinary assistant, equestrian professional, a public safety telecommunicator, and now writer. And we're going to be talking about her new novel, Street. Elisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
This is so funny because we don't really know each other except vaguely over Facebook.
Yes, and we have some connections.
We do. It's just one of those things. I really felt I wanted to read this. I don't cover a lot of novels, and I'm really always fascinated. Is this your first novel published?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
I've had several short pieces mm-hmm. published in various magazines over the last couple of years, but this is the first full-length novel. And I did publish a picture book, a children's picture book, under a pen name.
Let me ask you about this, because I consider novel writing to be one of those things. It's just one huge meatball. It's really difficult to get through this. I think it's one of the most difficult arts, and I want to say you did it really well. But what pushed you to do this?
So it I'm almost embarrassed to say that, you know, when I was a kid, I was very prone to escapism. And growing up, way before cell phones and even television for some households, kids were in their own head, and they had, you know, they used their imaginations. And at some point, for whatever reason, I just started playing these fantasies in my head with these characters. And wow. As I grew, they grew. And
that's fascinating.
But you know, the thing is that, you know, I had this propensity for storytelling in my own mind. Never shared it with anybody for years, like including the numerous therapists I saw over two decades. And you know, coincidentally, I also loved language. I loved like mm-hmm. the cadence of language, you know, different dialects, accents, all of that kind of stuff. So words and the rhythm of words, and never put the two together.
Wow.
Until much later in life. But, you know, my mother always said I was a late bloomer.
Is it one of the, you've done many things, including a lot more things than I mentioned. Is it one of those things that when you finally sat down to start to work on this, did you feel like, yeah, this is something I should have done all along?
I think so. But, you know, there were also, you know, as we'll probably talk about, you know, the story is, it's gritty and it's dark in places.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that it wasn't, you know, it might not be believable that some of the scenarios that happened, you know, in the book were just too dark. But then I kept seeing stuff on the news, especially the, you know, that kidnapping in Ohio, the Ariel Castro case where he had those kids locked in that house for a decade probably. And I was like, well, I guess, you know, my idea for a novel isn't that bad, because this stuff is happening in real life, probably more often than we suspect.
But the other part of that is, this is a novel about the people who get preyed on, in one way, and how they succeed.
Yes, definitely a survivor story.
And it's a really amazing one. It takes place in the 70s in New York. Now, you were born and raised in New York.
I was.
The 70s was a very particular and very interesting time in New York City. Can you talk to me about that?
Sure. It was, you know, the city was borderline bankrupt.
Yep.
There were few cops, and, you know, the municipalities were struggling. So there was a lot of crime. There was a lot of drugs. You know, there were a lot of vets coming home from Vietnam. With few resources, drug problems, and
was that the time where there was a headline of something about the rest of America just told New York City to go to hell, kind of thing. It sort of gave up on it.
Pretty much, yeah. And you know, you could tell, you know, I grew up there, so I didn't really know anything different. But, it was rough and it was gritty, but it's just what it was. You never knew what you would encounter on the subway or on the street, but it certainly didn't stop us growing up. My hippy dippy parents, much like the parents of most of my peers, were into their own stuff. You know, they were taking drugs and partying, and there was very little supervision. So starting at a very young age, me and my friends were just hanging out on the street doing whatever we were doing.
Yeah. It's an amazing time period. And the funny thing is, because you came from New York, you got all the geography right in the book, because that's something that people watch. But you really got a sense of place in this novel. I mean, this is really a New York novel.
Oh, great. I'm really happy to hear that. The most of the locations are very personally close to me.
Oh, I got that feeling, because there's too much detail and sense of place.
Yeah, the apartments,
yeah,
the places,
oh, yeah,
I lived, or places my family or friends lived. And certainly the hangouts. I spent many, many hours in Washington Square Park just hanging out. And
that's one of the central locations of this novel.
It was, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Now, the story centers around Johnny Alvarez, who is actually from Miami and escapes his family. And we'll talk about that in a bit. I don't want to give away too much to get to New York City. So here's this young kid. How old is Johnny?
Johnny's 12.
He's
just had his 12th birthday when he's able to escape.
And there he is, and he's in New York City in the 70s and has no idea of how to get along. And essentially, this novel traces that sense of building up his own family. Now, it's not a family in the traditional sense, but there's a family that evolves around him and that he causes to evolve around him. But what an amazing story. So in one sense, the story is actually very uplifting. Am I being too generous? I mean, it is a grim and gritty. But, you know, by the end of the novel, he's got a group of people who support him. And he's still a teenager. He goes to school. That was one of the big things I wanted to talk about. He goes to school, and he's really good at it.
Yes, that's what, a good friend of mine and one of my writing group partners always calls them, the erudite gangsters.
It really is. And they care about school. I so love that you did that in this book.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you know, Johnny had this terrible home life in Miami.
Oh, terrible doesn't really do that justice. People are going to have to in all seriousness, Elisa, I got to those sections down in the cellar. It went beyond frickin' grim. I mean, it was like a whole other thing. It was definitely dark.
Yeah.
And it was dark above the cellar and dark, very dark below the cellar. And, people are going to have to read the book in order to find out what we're talking about. Let me talk to you about writing those sections. I mean, what goes on for you as a writer to try to capture that stuff? Because that, as a reader, it was jolting. It was wild to come across
that. It
was
very difficult.
And as a reader, I didn't want him to go down there anymore. I wanted him to not remember anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were very difficult scenes to write. And, in some of the, believe me, they've been toned down in drafts too.
Yeah.
I definitely.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. So it was worse? Come on. Are you serious?
I was like a chronic overwriter. And then, the harder you have to go in there and cut everything. But people say that the characters talk to you and their stories, mm-hmm. They present themselves to you. I'm sure I could tie some of those feelings to feelings that I had growing up. Certainly I didn't suffer the kind of abuse that he did, but it was me just channeling some really deep, dark inner feelings that existed in me and putting them on the page. And they were extremely difficult to write. Even still, if I go through and read those scenes, I'm just racked, and I can cry when I'm writing. There are plenty of tear stains on my keyboard.
Wow.
But that's, you know, fortunately, it explains his capacity for, certain situations, to handle certain situations later on in his life.
But he's still haunted in a variety of ways by what went on.
Yeah.
And in ways that he can't quite all remember it either.
Right. He's haunted by the inability to remember, but yet it's like a blessing and a curse.
And that's why...
Does he really want to know?
For the benefit of the audience, I have to ask you, will there be a sequel? Because when I got to the last page, I went, what?
There is a sequel. I am doing the final revisions as we speak.
Do you have any idea when it's going to be out?
I'm a slow editor, and I really want to get everything.
So wait a minute. Okay, wait a minute. You're your own editor.
Well, yes. No, my publisher helps with the editing too. But as far as like the revisions go, I'm very nitpicky about stuff. So I'm working on that now, and then there is an outline and a couple of chapters already started for the third book.
Okay, so it's a trilogy.
Wait
a minute, Elisa. Are you going for the long series, like 10 books? Or are you just going to leave it as a trilogy?
Yeah, I don't know. Could this be the Game of Thrones? Maybe.
The gritty Game of Thrones.
Right.
The New York City version of the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. That's what I love that. I love people who write these like series. It's such a different framework. To just like go, yeah, I'm going to plot it out. I mean, do you sketch out plot details? Like, do you storyboard it out?
No, I am definitely, when I started writing, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I'm an animal science major. So I had this huge idea, you know, that spanned for years because, you know, I've been imagining this story for decades. I mean,
wow.
these people are way grown up already in my head. So it could go on for God knows how long. So I just started pantsing and I came up, it took me about maybe a year and a half to write the first draft, which was 300,000 words. And I thought, great, I'll start querying this around. Stupidly, but then after I wrote it, I got involved in the local writing community. I live on Cape Cod. I got involved in the Cape Cod Writer Center. I started taking classes. I took some.
Oh, you sit on the board of directors.
I do. Yes, it's a great organization.
Hey, let's digress for just a second. Talk
sure.
to me about the Cape Cod Writer Center.
This is a great organization. They have seminars. Monthly, they do a summer conference, which is coming up in August. It's a 4-day conference. There are, instructors from all over the country, all different genres, screenwriters, poets, talking about editing. There's like a query session for querying. You know, there's agents that'll be there. It's a great event for our little Cape Cod community.
Can anybody just participate, or do you have to be a resident of Cape Cod?
No, anybody can participate. I think the classes are discounted if you're a member, but annual membership is reasonable. The monthly seminars are free for members.
You're,
and they have some other like a young writers program.
Wow. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Elisa D. Metcalf. She's had year-long careers in any one of a number of things, including line cook, veterinary assistant, equestrian professional, public safety telecommunicator, and now writer. And we've been talking about her absolutely brand-new novel, Street, which is, I read it, was an amazing read, but I hoped that there was going to be a sequel because I was left like, oh. There were some things I wanted to get done in that book. Did you travel back to New York City to sort of freshen up the feel in your head?
I did. My parents both lived there for a lot of the time that I was writing the book, and I would go back and visit. just spend all day walking around, getting ideas and refreshing memories. It's great. I mean, I love the city. I would love to spend more time there if I could.
It's nowhere near as gritty as it was when you were there at this time. Where it's like,
no.
Is that sort of a disappointment? That sounded weird.
It is a disappointment. I mean, it's instead of gritty, it's kind of smarmy. You know?
So it got gentrified?
Yes, yeah. But, you know, it's kind of feels fake now.
Oh, wow.
Like, you know, it's not, it doesn't,
it's like a cartoon of New York City.
It is, but you know something, the people are still real. Like, you know, the interactions you have with people just on the subway or getting a cup of coffee in the diner. You know, New Yorkers are always just plain real, which is what I love.
And that explains a lot about how this book reads, by the way, because it reads very real. Can I ask you to read a little section so listeners can get a taste of it?
Sure, sure. I will read. I can read from chapter one.
Excellent.
All right. The slapping of sneakers on pavement matched the rhythm of Johnny's breath. Palm trees, parked cars, and bungalows bounced off his peripheral vision, obscured by sweat. When headlights approached, he ducked his wiry frame behind a telephone pole. He used the opportunity to wipe his face on his T-shirt, then realigned the shoulder straps of his backpack. Once the car had passed, Johnny hurried along the sidewalk. But run where? He searched the sky. Miami's summer haze had muted the moon's glow, along with the blinking lights of a descending jumbo jet. He remembered there was a bus station near the airport a few miles away. When Johnny got to the depot, he watched from across the street. Moths ricocheted off the big picture windows, drawn to the fluorescent lights inside. A few people paced while others lay on benches. Blue-shirted employees slumped over counters, smoking cigarettes and chatting. It was still too empty. In a few hours, it would be light. There would be more people to blend in with. Johnny saw a parking lot on the next block. It was surrounded by hedges and a flimsy chain-link fence. He ducked inside and opened a he ducked inside an opening and found a secluded corner behind some cars. Shaking off his pack, which was stuffed with as many clothes as it could fit, he sat down to wait. Please let me be gone before my parents wake up.
Oh. And you'll learn if you read the book about, you know, I read that, but it was really funny when I read that is, yeah, I'm sure he's like a teenager who's having problems with his parents. That's not, that's an understatement that you wouldn't believe. All the other characters in the book are fascinating too. And I have to say, my favorite character was the brick.
Yes, the brick.
How would you describe the brick?
The brick is just cool and charismatic and slick.
Yeah, and he plays chess.
He plays chess. He is, you know, he's also extremely smart. He is a mid-level drug dealer, but, you know, not overambitious. He knows. He's like, this is my territory. I'm going to stay here. He's not into taking a lot of risks. But he's also, you know, he's a really good people person, and he recognizes something in Johnny, even as young as he is.
Yeah, you definitely want to be on his good side.
Yes, yes. But he's, you know.
But he's the man that makes things, he makes things happen, man.
He does. And, you know, I totally know this guy. Like, I don't know the guy, but I know the guy.
Oh, I know.
And my New York friends that read it go, oh, yeah, I know that guy.
Probably is in another month or two, people are going to be writing to you. Is that me?
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the characters are, I wouldn't say directly based on people that I knew, but definitely, you know, blurred versions or amalgamations of.
I think he was the hippest character in the book.
Definitely.
I mean, now, the name of the gang that Johnny eventually forms around him is called Dogs of War. And the first thing I thought of was that a film reference to the Christopher Walken movie?
Well, no, because at the time of the book, the movie wasn't out yet.
Shit,
but
you're right.
There are things in the book, especially, I think, more so the second book, that are very Shakespearean.
Oh. That was an interesting taste of things to come.
And, I mean, they kind of came upon the name, like, accidentally. It was just, like, plays on words. You know, one of the the friend's snarky sisters, you know, was always calling them a bunch of mutts and, you know, flea bags and joking around and teasing them about, you know, even as the gang keeps growing bigger and bigger, she just always puts them in their place and has a smart mouth. And it kind of comes out as her calling her mutts that they're like, no, we're dogs of war. So, yeah. The
Did you write yourself in this anyway?
I think there's me in most of the characters, but I, you know, maybe with a little more therapy. I mean, there's, you know, I obviously, you know, very close to Johnny.
Yeah, I could tell.
And there's, you know, what he feels, I feel. It's just I'm taking those feelings and attaching them to different scenarios.
It was an amazing tough time for young people, especially homeless young people. There's a lot of detail about squatting in apartments. Mm-hmm. And people today probably have no idea that this kind of thing occurred with regularity and commonness, and especially right. in the big cities like New York City. That happened. That teenage kids are running away from home and then trying to find a life for themselves. Most of it does not work out anywhere near as well as it does for Johnny.
Well, yeah, well-ish.
Now,
we'll see as things get, you know.
Okay. Well, you're privy to knowledge I don't have. So, oh, no. Don't tell me. I didn't want to know that. I'm going to stick my fingers in my ear.
But you know, the thing about New York, I mean, it's really easy to hide there. I mean, there's just so much going on, and there's plenty of people vying for attention that if you really want to lay low, you can.
Now, did you set off to purposely write the quote-unquote gritty novel? I know this is that term. It's funny how often people are going to use that in relationship to this. It's like a genre. did you want that? I mean, did you want that label?
I didn't. I was.
Do you accept it?
Oh, I totally accept it.
Okay.
Like, I only just learned what noir fiction was. Like,
this is noir.
How much of an ignoramus I am, like, about, you know, the literary world. I'm learning. Believe me.
Oh, this
me.
Is
I wrote
definitely.
The book. I
this
did
is...
it backwards. I wrote the book first, and then I went for the next 10 years and studied, you know, about writing. But, yeah, I mean, noir fiction, gritty, urban set, morally compromised protagonist, bleak outlook on humanity. It fits.
Yeah, there's no really good person in the book, is there? In the traditional sense of good. Everybody's morally compromised in the book in some form. Yeah.
Yes.
But I guess we all are, so.
But they're also doing what they have to do to survive.
You're
absolutely
right.
I mean, even Margaret, the high-end escort that Johnny befriends. You know, she's a very self-actualized person.
She is. Yeah, I like Margaret.
Yeah. Margaret needs her own book.
Well, I was going to ask, that was my next question. Are you going to write a book with a female protagonist as a center figure?
I could. I do have, you know, outside of the series, I have ideas for other books. You know, it's just this right now is taking all my focus, but yeah, I would like to write something.
I would love to read
that. I mean, come to think of it, yeah, the other stuff is kind of dark too, but in a totally different way. I think I like this.
I know I love how we're laughing about how dark it is.
Right. But, you know, that's something, you know, having worked for the police department
and stuff,
you know, you develop, I mean, even before, you know, you develop this morose humor.
That's right. That's the only way you get through the day.
Yeah, it's a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And I've always, you know, said, you know, if it wasn't for sarcasm, I'd have no personality at all.
Is there an author that you really love?
So, you know, I was a terrible reader as a kid. And then as I got older, I was really drawn to a lot of nonfiction.
Huh.
You know, like, because being involved in animal science and horse training, I read.
I mean, there's that whole other side of your life in horses and animal husbands.
Thank goodness, because, you know, I think I'd.
I know, it balances out incredibly.
So, I mean, it's really since I started writing this book, you know, when I decided to put it on the page, I was like, yeah, I really need to start reading more stuff in this genre. And I mean, I love Adam Rapp.
Oh, wow.
He's a playwright, yep. But he's written a couple of novels, and he's written a bunch of young adult books, which are really dark. I mean,
really?
As dark almost as this, but in a bit of a YA format. I mean, the scenarios are really serious and disturbing, and I just love his writing, but his adult novels, too, are great. I'm just so envious of his descriptions.
Wow.
And everything are phenomenal. And, Colson Whitehead, too,
his
writings. I'm reading, I don't know how I haven't heard of him until now. I'm like, what, stupid me.
I love
his books.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just like, I read one, and then I went and bought, like, all the others, and they're just sitting on my shelf. I'm reading another one now.
Well, you wrote a young people's book, a children's book, too.
I did, yeah, which is, also a bit. It's kind of a,
it was about a horse that grew up in Miami and escaped to
right,
New York City.
Right. And winds up, pulling a carriage.
we're gonna have to stop there. But I definitely am going to have you back when the second volume comes out, because I need to know a lot of things and where they're going to go. Now I'm especially intrigued talking to you. My guest tonight has been Alisa D. Metcalf. She's had year-long careers in a lot of things that we haven't even talked about, as a line cook, a veterinary assistant, an equestrian professional, and public safety telecommunicator, but now really a writer. And we've been talking about her new novel, Street. It's really worth a read. Alisa, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate it.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.